Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Muhammad Citizen for the week of January 20th, 2020. Our readings will start with this article under the banner of MS Schools. The headline reads, Policy Changes in Works. School Board Panel Advances Discussions. Policies regarding Muhammad Seymour Board of Education members requesting information from district employees and separately the potential appointment of a student representative to the board were advanced this week. The Board Policy Committee met Monday, and both proposals, along with others, were advanced to be considered by the entire board, which next meets at 7 p.m. Tuesday, January 21st. Board member Ken Keefe, who is also a member of the Policy Committee, brought forth a policy change stating, any individual board member may request information from district employees. It is not required for board members to state a purpose for the requested information. The proposed change comes in the wake of criticism from other board members after Keefe requested information from Superintendent Lindsay Hall, but would not state his intention for seeking the data. His request was for items including the salaries and benefits of every employee in the district. On the student representative topic, the new policy proposed by Keefe states, in part, the Muhammad Seymour Board of Education strongly values the voices of students in its work to govern the district. To that end, a student representative shall work with the board in an advisory role to assist the board in understanding the needs of students. The representative shall primarily be the voice for all students at Muhammad Seymour High School, but shall also strive to represent the interests of all students in the Muhammad Seymour School District. Keefe also proposed a new board policy regarding public reports. The suggested verbiage notes, in order to measure the accomplishment of goals and objectives referenced in School Board Policy 3:10, Goals and Objectives, public reports containing objective data shall be produced and published publicly for all stakeholders to examine. He also proposed a policy related to tax increment financing, TIF, and rules of engagement related to TIF districts. Next, on the front page, we have this article headed up by Complex Taking Shape, New Spotlight on US 150 Related to Project. It's been a long time coming, but visible progress is being made daily now on the new Solace of Muhammad multi-building apartment complex at the intersection of Lake of the Woods Road and US 150/Oak Street. It should go up pretty quick, especially the next month or two, said Chris Saunders, owner of Green Street Realty and its development arm, Sub 4 Development LLC, which are behind the project. It'll certainly start looking like something. It's looked like a big pile of dirt for a long time now. Kelly Pfeiffer, Community Development Director for the Village of Muhammad, said village leaders originally approved an agreement with Sub 4 and Green Tree on August 14, 2018. She said the project is being developed under a highly cooperative and detailed development agreement between the village and developer. Saunders said progress is picking up on the complex. It's going very well. It's taken us a while to kind of get things moving, he said. There's a lot of infrastructure work that had to be done there. It was a raw piece of land that we had to bring all the utilities to and clear a lot of overgrown brush and things that have been there for a long time. And we finally got at that point where all utilities are in. We've got some of the parking lots in, and we started the first building. In conjunction with the new development, a traffic signal is slated to be installed at the intersection sometime this year, Pfeiffer said. The construction of Solace of Muhammad benefits the entire area, Pfeiffer stated in an email this month. It extends the bike path onto the south side of Oak Street to the entrance of Barber Park, bring sanitary sewer service to the northern side of Oak Street, expected to facilitate development of those large underdeveloped parcels, adds a traffic signal to a key intersection, and realigns the McDougal Road / Oak Street intersection for improved visibility and safety. In Phase 1, Solace of Muhammad is set to include 4 residential buildings and a clubhouse. The second phase will complete the complex with another 4 residential structures. Amenities are to include a pool, pond with picnic area and walking trail, private patios and balconies, a large fitness center, and a bar/lounge area. The way we're going to do this, we're actually doing it in phases, Saunders said. So our first phase, which is what we're doing right now, will end up being 4 apartment buildings and the clubhouse. Then we'll continue with the second phase, which would be the rest of the project, which will be another 4 buildings. In the first phase, we'll have about 88 apartments, and then overall we'll have 194 after the second phase. We're right now shooting for August to have the first building done, Saunders said. Then we'll deliver the other buildings about every week or two after that. They're kind of staggered. 3 buildings will be done in August, and the last couple will be September. The developer is aiming for occupancy to start in late summer. Saunders noted that Sub4/Green Street are assisting with the development of the stoplight on the US 150 at Lake of the Woods Road. That's a great thing. I know it's needed even prior to us doing this development, Saunders said. I know the village has been really pushing IDOT to get another traffic signal along that stretch because it's so busy, especially kind of in the evenings and morning hours. So that's going to be a nice welcome addition on that corner to have that. We are contributing part of that cost. After development is complete, Green Street Realty will handle leasing and other duties to operate Solace of Muhammad. And why Muhammad? We looked at doing kind of multifamily newer construction project like this, and we haven't done one. We've got several existing projects like this in the market, but this was a good opportunity. The lot seemed like a very good spot to do it, kind of in town there, Saunders said. We like the location, and we know the market has got a lot of owner-occupied units. There are some rentals in Muhammad, but we thought there was a space for it, he added. We believe it will be popular not just amongst people that live in Muhammad, but people in Champaign County that might be looking for something in between building a home or just looking for kind of a long-term apartment solution. We like the location. We love the opportunity to get into Muhammad and build, and we think it's just an ideally suited location for us. Solace of Muhammad will be a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments. The 2- and 3-bedroom units will each have 2 bathrooms. There will be some garage parking and some carport-style parking available, according to Saunders. Costs to lease at Solace of Muhammad will range from $1,200 to $1,600, he said. They're not cheap, but kind of in line with what we see out there and kind of for kind of new pricing and other new developments, Saunders said. We think these will be really nice. Now turning to page A2, we have this article. It's headlined 10 Question Friday. Each week we interview a familiar face in town. This week Mindy Anderson chats with Muhammad citizens Penny Weaver. Mindy Anderson works in support services at Lincoln Trail Elementary School in Muhammad. Starting at Sangamon, I moved to Muhammad in the middle of my 2nd grade year, she said. I transferred to upstate New York for a short time during high school, but returned and graduated from Muhammad Seymour High School, then continued my education at Parkland Community College. Mindy and her husband, Steve, have 3 sons, Noah, Ethan, and Levi. Noah enlisted in the delayed entry program for the U.S. Marine Corps at the end of his junior year, 2015, and married a sister Marine during the summer of 2018. He and wife Miranda are expecting a child this summer, Mindy and Steve's first grandchild. Ethan also enlisted in the delayed entry program for the U.S. Marine Corps at the end of his junior year, 2018. He has completed boot camp and will be joining the fleet soon. Levi is a junior at Muhammad Seymour High School. So question number one, if you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with the extra time? I would read countless books that I have been putting off, as well as others that would come up. I would also get to some of the series on Netflix that my sons have put on my list and take my dog for more walks. Question two, what hobby would you get into if time and money weren't an issue? Photography. I loved taking pictures of the boys and their teams while they were in sports. I gained experience with from Muhammad Rec Department sports, soccer club, high school soccer, and lacrosse. I have also taken family and senior photos. Question 3. What could you give a 45-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation? First of all, I would ask to change this question from a presentation to an instructional hands-on class. I have been teaching a class in our after-school program, BLAST, at Lincoln Trail for over 6 years, watching the boys and girls enjoying their time in class while learning the skills of crochet gives my volunteers and me joy. Question 4. When you are old, what do you think children will ask you to tell a story about? I could only guess. One could only hope it is for something like remembering when we ended terrorism. Question 5. What's the favorite piece of clothing you own or did own and why? This would probably be the large number of vests I have because of versatility. However, my favorite accessory is my son is a Marine pin, for obvious reasons. Question 6. What are the small things that would make your day better, and why is that? Small things that make my day better are smiles and kindness. I smile and greet kids in the hallway at school. Sometimes it's the one positive act that a student needs to start their day on a good foot. Another thing that I love to see is when a student has one of those aha moments. This happens when they may be having difficulty with something like a math problem, and then you might explain it in a different way and you see a light bulb go on above their head. Their face brightens and they have a look of surprise and then a smile. They got it. Those moments are priceless. Question 7. What is the luckiest thing that has happened to you and when did it occur? The luckiest thing that has happened to me was when I started working in special education at Muhammad Seymour School District 12 years ago. Having the same holidays and breaks as my kids has been a godsend. Moreover, I'm thankful to have a job I enjoy. Question 8. What is one of your favorite smells? Eucalyptus and spearmint, magnolias and jasmine. Question 9. What fictional place would you most like to go? Pandora from Avatar or Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory? Number 10. Now, if you could give advice based on your knowledge today to yourself as a 20-year-old, what would it be? To avoid an injury that is complicated ongoing things for me, but otherwise, live and save for your future. And since we couldn't stop at 10, one bonus question, what gets you fired up? I get fired up when I see or hear others treat people with disabilities differently, less than their capabilities. For instance, many years I've been paired with students who have no verbal ability. During that time, a few people have commented that they couldn't handle working with someone without speech. I didn't look at it that way. I usually told them, I don't know what you're talking about. I talk to him or her all day long. We talk about everything. I also hate to see when people baby talk to kids with disabilities. They should not be humiliated like that in front of their peers and certainly not in a one-to-one conversation. Give someone a chance. It might surprise you what they can do. On the other hand, I get fired up after a long walk with my greyhound. He's a retired racer, So he loves to jump into the back of my car and go to the Lake of the Woods walking paths or the dog parks. And now, turning to page A4, on the opinions page, we have the column by Zainab Suzy, Life is Beautiful. And the title of her piece this week is Ritual Experience in Mexico, Memorable. Recently, Matt and I went to Cancun for vacation. I know these days so many people are nervous about going to Mexico, and I understand them. But we feel lucky and blessed. We absolutely have no issue at all. Everything was how it was supposed to be, and we made it back home safely. The ocean view was absolutely beautiful and breathtaking. We both sure enjoyed our visit. We got to visit different places and did many fun activities. But there was one experience I will never forget, and I never thought I would do it. One morning when we were walking by the beach, a resort worker asked us if we wanted to join a Temescal ceremony. It's only 2 minutes long. We asked what it was, and she said, "Follow me." So we did. Not too far from where we were, there was a guy and a woman who were dressed as native Mexicans. Some other people around us came too. It was a ritual slash prayer in Spanish. We all stood up in a circle and followed whatever they asked us to do. It was different, but nice and peaceful. The resort translator translated everything. When they were done, they asked all of us if we wanted to join for the real 30-minute-long Temescal Spa later on. For some reason, I got interested. I asked what their beliefs are. The translator translated for me, and they said they believe in energy. I got more interested. Later that afternoon, I went, thinking it was going to be like yoga. I can't describe the whole thing, but if you are interested, you can Google it. According to TripSavvy.com, a Temazcal is a traditional Mexican steam bath that is, in many ways, similar to the Native American sweat lodge. Besides promoting physical well-being and healing, the Temazcal is also a ritual and spiritual practice in which traditional healing methods are used to encourage reflection and introspection. It was something I had never experienced before. There were six of us. We had to crowd inside of a dome that looked like a tiny red brick home. We sat in a circle, and there was a hole in the middle, and the guy explained everything before he started and told us it was going to get very hot, smoky, and dark. If anybody wanted to live, they could leave then, but not in the middle of the ritual. The English translator was inside the dome, too, and he translated everything. It was a four-part ceremony. The first two were in complete darkness and smoke. During the third, you could see a little bit, but the fourth and the last part were extremely hot, where you felt like you were on fire. Every single part of your body sweat. They burned lots of rocks, and each rock had different meanings. And they prayed for every living thing around the world. It's a detox for our physical and spiritual healing. At the end of the whole idea is we let go of everything from our ego and control so we can be reborn again. While I was in the Temescal Spa, this is what I experienced. I don't know any of these people. I am away from home. I found myself in a very unfamiliar place, which was really very scary, and my mind started wondering about all the negatives that could happen to me. Lots of what-ifs. I had to focus really hard, but I kept losing it. Many times I wanted to leave because I was scared, but I knew I couldn't go. So at some point, instead of resisting, I realized, this is not a bad thing. This is good for me. I didn't think I liked to be in control about everything, but I was wrong about many past events. I honestly thought I had forgiven many people and moved on. But with many people later, I was still holding on to it and carrying a heavy burden for no reason. The Temescal ritual sure made us disconnect with a man-made world and focus on ourselves like we were born again with a clean mind and body. I am glad I got the chance to experience something unique, and as much as it was scary and uncomfortable, I didn't quit. What a beautiful tradition. I will never forget that. My point of writing about this experience is that we can say all the right things, but we will know for sure where we are in life when we are in unfamiliar situations and how we will behave. I sure have a long way to go, but at least my Cancun visit helped me to start my journey. The sad thing is, nobody ever really knows how much anymore anyone else is hurting. We could be standing next to somebody who's completely broken, and we wouldn't even know it. Author unknown. And now turning to page A2, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Rory Lewis Hans passed away peacefully in the arms of his parents on December 19, 2019 at 11:52 a.m. He was born at 7:12 a.m. at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Rory was the son of Samuel and Lindsay Farrell Hans. Memorials in Rory's name may be directed to the Carl NICU at carl.org/giving/make-a-gift. Online condolences may be made at calvertmemorial.com. Edward Allen Lotz, 86, of Mahomet, passed away peacefully at his home on Wednesday, January 1, 2020. Services were held at the Mahomet United Methodist Church, 1302 East South Mahomet Road, on Friday, January 17, 2020. The visitation began at 11 a.m., followed by a celebration of life service at noon. The UMW hosted a luncheon at the church following the service. Blair Owens' funeral home in Mahomet assisted with the arrangements. On Friday, January 10, 2020, Christy L. Miller passed away at the age of 54 after fighting a courageous battle against cancer. A celebration of life gathering was on Friday, January 17, 2020, from 4 to 7 p.m., with law enforcement honor guard ceremonies and walkthrough at 5 p.m. The gathering was held at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home, 925 North Illinois Route 47 in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or to the Champaign Humane Society. Online condolences and memories can be shared at www.rosenbaumfh.com. Terry Lee Perkins of Mahomet went to meet his Lord and Savior on Sunday, January 12, 2020, in Champaign, surrounded by his loving family. A celebration of Terry's life was held in his favorite place. Correction, is to be held in his favorite place, his garage workshop, 102 County Road 2800 North in Mahomet, on Saturday, January 25th at 2 p.m. To honor Terry's love of animals, donations can be made to the Champaign County Humane Society. Condolences may be offered at www.owensfuneralhomes.com. And now, returning to page A4, the opinions page, we have the Ramblings column by Jim Matthews. And his article is headlined, "Every Tale Has to Start Somewhere." Here's how one of America's most beloved stories begins. In the bosom of one of those spacious coves which indent the eastern shore of the Hudson, at that broad expansion of the river denominated by the ancient Dutch navigators the Tappan Zee, and where they prudently shortened sail and implored the protection of St. Nicholas when they crossed, there lies a small market town or rural port which by some is called Greenburg, but which is more generally known by the name of Tarrytown. This is but the first sentence. The opening paragraph goes on for several more similar sentences, shepherding the reader into a particular fictional universe delineated by choice of vocabulary, tone, rhythm, and imagery. I am, as we all, a product of my time. When I was in graduate school in Ann Arbor, yes, Steve, Alabama embarrassed us. Very good professors taught us to analyze literature as if it had no author. We were told at that time that it was impossible to determine the author's intent, and who cares what he intended, for by the very act of being printed or published, the story, novel, or poem, now known universally as the text, was freed from the author's intended meaning and subject to logical, evidence-based interpretation by the critic. In other words, once the author, to whom went the reputation and the rewards, released his text into the wild, meaning was attributed by the literary critic. Us, in other words, the groveling, impoverished graduate students sitting around tables in the Modern Language Building, desperately trying to find an interpretation that would lead to a dissertation that might get us a job. Our intention was crystal clear. Eating was better than not eating. We also learned, at least in the French canon, that authors that mattered were he, with a few exceptions to prove the rule. I noticed that a string of authors I studied in the 17th and 18th centuries all had mothers who died when they were very young, suggesting to me that lives of women at that time were more difficult, if not more lethal, than those of men. My professors thought this irrelevant unless I could find some reference to it in the text. The generation of scholars in French literature, after mine, made careers out of tracing the influence of missing pieces, such as mothers, but that is another story. I decided that scholarship had not paid enough attention to the ways in which French playwrights in the 17th century opened their plays. Most critical thought over 250 years had dismissed play openings as exposition, a mere setting of the chess pieces on the board. My argument was that how these pieces were shaped and where they were placed determined the course of the game. Literature was not chess. The pieces could be placed in a wide variety of arrays that determined how the game would unwind. In fact, in literature, the game began as the pieces were set upon the board. My work balanced on two underpinnings, Beginnings by Edward Said and The Structure of Scientific Revolutions by Thomas Kuhn. The first taught me the importance of origin and why we mythologize it. The second gave me courage to advocate for the paradigm shift I was proposing in interpreting literature. After many attempts, this groveling and impoverished graduate student punched his ticket into a very fulfilling career in which he taught 4 or 5 language courses for every literature course he ever offered. Irving sets all of this up very nicely in his opening sentence, where we learn that our storyteller is rather pedantic himself, letting us know that he is well versed in Dutch history of navigation and is equally aware that the town in which the story is to be centered has 2 names, Greenberg and Tarrytown. We learn that the location of the story is a dangerous place where Dutch sailors shortened sail and sought saintly protection. Similar dark and mysterious forces will, of course, wreak havoc in the life of Ichabod Crane. We learn in the remainder of the first paragraph that women named it Tarrytown because their men lingered there longer than necessary, and that nearby lies a little valley, or rather lap of land, that is the quietest place on earth. Most of us know the story, though few of us have read it in the original. Disney altered it into a cartoon for children. Johnny Depp made it into something altogether different. I am no longer of my time. I am Rip Van Winkle. This has been the Mahomet Citizen for the week of January 20th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.